Welcome to episode 11 of the Simple Farmhouse Life podcast. Today I am sharing an interview that I did with Heather O'Neill. She is a certified nurse midwife and IBCLC, which stands for International Board Certified Lactation Consultant. And she has a Facebook group called Breastfeeding for Busy Moms. I'll admit that the audio from this interview isn't as good as usual because we just chatted through Zoom. But I still see some value in the discussion. Originally, I was doing this interview just to share over on there, but then I decided that it would be good to share on my podcast too, just because it has so many topics that came up that you guys actually ask me a lot about. Baby wearing, breastfeeding, birth, and there's my baby now. So without further ado, I will let you listen to the interview. My name is Lisa, mom of six and creator of the blog and YouTube channel Farmhouse on Boone. Join me as I share with you my love for creating a handmade home from scratch cooking and a little mom and entrepreneur life along the way.
Can you tell us what your favorite parts of what you do are and a little about you?
So yes, I am a full-time blogger slash YouTuber. I brought my husband home from his job almost 2 years ago, yes, this year in May. And we have six kids and we kind of make our living by sharing our life online. And obviously that's just a really fun thing to do because I get to share all my favorite recipes and projects and that's how I make a living. So it's kind of a dream for me. And then I get to obviously be home with my little ones. I have a baby that's 3 months old. He just turned 3 months and obviously I haven't had to leave him. And so that's my favorite part.
Oh my gosh. That is the dream. And you know what, like my favorite thing about you and what you're doing is everything that you do feels more attainable when I'm watching you do it. Because I mean, when I had my first baby, I literally packed up my sewing machine and I was like, see ya in 5 years. And like so many times, I want to do all the things that you're doing, like, you know, cooking in cast iron, and I want to like make my own baby wraps and do the things. And then I am like, my kids are eating frozen lasagna and I'm like, oh my gosh, how does she do it? It's so amazing. It's like a whole lifestyle. So I really, really appreciate that you make it seem like, calm down, lady. It's okay. You don't have to do all of this all at once. It's just
right. A little
at a time. And I have to tell you my story about the starter recipe. So my mom found you first and she lives across the street from me and she's, you know, very into everything that you're doing. So she got your starter recipe and she started making tons of starter, which she named Fred.
It needs a name. It's basically a pet.
It's a pet that you have to feed and grow. And so she makes Fred bread and Fred pancakes and all of those things. And so I have a small home office because I'm a midwife and I see patients at my house. And one day she ran over and she said, hey, I made you some starter. And I was like, you got to get out of here. My patient's coming over soon. So she put it on the dining room table and she left. And like right as I'm about to do a pelvic exam, the starter exploded because she had put the lid on the mason jar and I swear it was the loudest.
So it was a nice like, active starter.
And oh my gosh. So I almost had a heart attack and I took a picture of it and I sent it to my patient after and I said, turns out it was the starter exploding. And she, all she wrote back was, must have been a really good starter.
Right. You have this crunchy mom. She knows all about it.
Yeah. So thank you for that. And I'm glad that I had not started the pelvic exam.
Oh my gosh.
So this life that you live, which is so amazing. I know you've had home births. Did you have home births with all of your six kids?
No, I had the first two in the hospital.
Two
girls. At the time it was an insurance issue. Like we couldn't get anything covered, but then things have changed in Missouri to make it to where it makes more sense to have a home birth, which is not why I chose it, but it made it also financial sense. So,
yeah. Insurance is definitely the bane of most midwives' existences. Is this something that you grew up with? Like, did your mom have home births? And
no, to me, to have birth the way that it was designed was going to be the easiest, like most logical way to do it because it's how it's supposed to be.
Right.
And so to me, that's how I got into it. Like I mostly, after I had my first daughter and it wasn't a good experience at all, I started researching into it and learning a lot about natural ways to, you know, like get the baby in the right position and carry just all of it to where I felt like I would you know, they would just, it would just be an easier process. And so it was kind of just like a, this makes the most sense type of thing.
Yeah. I think a lot of women have a bad experience that spurs the next step for them. Like, oh, holy crap. I trusted all these people to guide me along this journey and they failed me. So yeah. I guess it's in on me to figure it out.
That was exactly, I went there completely like what you said. I was like, oh, he's an OBGYN. Like he's got my best interest here. And so I just figured whatever he says, I'll do. And that's how I ended up with an episiotomy and almost C-section, like this close. Like they were about to wheel me away. And I was like, no. And so then they're like, well, we'll try this. So they just cut and ripped. And that's how she was born.
You're like, cut me, Mick. Get the baby out.
Get the kid out of me. And then all the rest, five other births. Like I did have the next one in the hospital, but she was born like without an epidural. It was like, obviously not a cakewalk, but it wasn't like that.
It wasn't traumatic.
No, it was not traumatic. There was none of the other births had any trauma associated with them. Of course, it's hard, but this whole deal where like something goes massively wrong and the heart rate's plummeting and, you know, that's what happened with my first. And it was just all kinds of chaos. I thought she was going to die.
Yeah, so 100%.
That's what got me into that journey.
Oh, gosh. And you used the Bradley method, right?
I used the Bradley method for the next four. And then I didn't really use it with Daniel. So the next four, I did the Bradley method. It's where you basically completely relax through all your contractions. During pregnancy, you practice that relaxation and you can basically throw yourself into a really deep relaxation during contractions to make them almost painless, truly, except for transition. I've never figured that out. But then, yeah, other than that, painless. But Daniel, he was in a bad position and my midwife was able to tell that the entire time. Mm-hmm. And I ended up going into labor with him and I didn't progress for like 48 hours. I was just in labor every 8-ish minutes I'd have a contraction. And so I wasn't doing the Bradley method because she ended up doing the Miles circuit with me, which is definitely not the Bradley method, but it worked and he was born easily after that.
You know, it's kind of funny. I was just talking to my home birth midwife friend who's in the group. Her name's Maureen, and she's a great herbalist if you ever need any herb advice. But she was on her way to a birth, and it was the sixth baby. And I said, oh, you know, that should be fine. And she says, I don't know. There's something about the sixth baby that
really
gets weird. Yeah. She said,
it was a weird one for me.
Too loose or something, and the baby gets in weird positions.
Uh-huh. My third child, so I had the two hospital births. The third was going to be my first midwife-led birth at a birthing center, and I had him in the back of our van. Uh-huh. And here I'm going on 48 hours with my sixth. I was just like, what is this? I've never experienced this in my life. So yeah, I don't know. Something with the sixth put me in that mile circuit. I mean, being in that position during transition isn't great at all, but it worked really well.
Yeah, well, you know, Bradley, the guy that invented it, Dr. Bradley, was an obstetrician. And he lived on a farm. Did you know that?
No, I didn't. No.
Yeah. So that's why he developed it, because at that point in time in the 50s, they were like strapping women to the bed and twilight sleeping them and putting helmets on them so they didn't bang their heads against the cribs that they put them in, and then basically just yanking their babies out.
Right.
And he grew up on a farm and he was like, I'm pretty sure there's no cows wearing helmets that were tying to their stalls to have babies. Like, why are we doing this? So that's where the whole thing came from. So I'm glad you're like putting it out there, because
yes,
it's definitely helpful for people.
It was so helpful for my four births that I used it for. I mean, they were all good experiences. Obviously, my third was born so quickly that I couldn't even make it.
Yeah.
So,
and then we got a new car.
Clearly, it worked out really well for me. Well, we did eventually. My husband was a little bit sentimental about it. He's like, but Eli was born here.
We're saving the seat.
Yeah.
So did you always want to breastfeed? Or was that part
of it? Oh, yeah. Yes. Yeah. Well, see, when I was born in the 80s, that was in vogue. Like, you did not breastfeed. Yeah. The formula was better.
Yeah.
Pretty much nobody did. Mm-hmm. And their parents, too, actually. Like, my grandma and my husband's grandparents, that was out of fashion completely. But for me, with my first child, the motivation behind it was more money saving than anything. But then as I developed that relationship and then had more children, obviously it's become way more than that. I mean, to me, it's a lot of things. There's that bond. They're always with you. They have to be with you. There's no sterilizing. There's no packing anything. I just got to grab a diaper and the baby. That's it. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. And the time commitment thing is also a big myth. Like, oh, I don't have time to breastfeed. I'm a busy mom. That's why I called you, because you are like the busiest mom. So you have six kids and you run a business, maybe several businesses. I don't know if you have them all under the same umbrella.
But, yeah, they're all under the same umbrella. But yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you're like running a course. You have YouTube stuff going on, Facebook stuff going on. And, you know, obviously you have a farm and you're doing the projects that you're blogging about. So if you're breastfeeding and you're able to do it, that's why I'm constantly posting your video of the baby wearing. I'm like, you guys, like, this is it. Like, we have to figure this out.
Well, by the six, too, breastfeeding has become so easy. My sister and I both, she has four kids, but we'll breastfeed while walking through the grocery store. You got the baby in the one arm and you got the cart. You don't have to hold a bottle and the baby. It's just, they're just right there, you know? So to me, it's the easiest thing. And then also for anyone who just has one, encouragement too is, I feel like on the first baby, it takes like a half hour or more to nurse the baby. That was only for me on my first. All the other ones, it's like five minutes, they're done.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I just made a post recently, maybe a week ago, about how time doesn't equal volume. And I think people get really confused about that, because when they're in the hospital, they're constantly asking, well, how long did they nurse? Because that's the only measurable way that they can chart.
Right.
And so I think it sets them off on a really weird path of time and volume. And so I'm glad you said that. Thank you for bringing that up.
Yeah. And I also think too, like, I notice new moms, I get a lot of messages. They're always so concerned that they're not making enough. And they're so concerned. I've heard people like pumping just to see the amount.
Well, so the question I have for you about the baby wrap and nursing. So are you able to nurse in the wrap, or do you like take a minute, like take a little beat whenever you start to see the early cues and sit down and like get cozy and
I personally have never figured that out. I don't know if it's something with my torso, because people say it's very easy to do and I cannot get it. So me personally, I usually use a stretchy wrap. I have a knit wrap as well, or a woven wrap. This is a knit wrap. But I will just take him out, and if I'm wearing like a easy to pull down shirt, like a tank top, which I almost wear every single day, I can just not untie this. I'll take him out, nurse him, and then I'll put him back in, just because, you know, he's happy in here. Awake or asleep, he's happy in here. It stays on, but he comes out.
So you just take down the one strap?
I don't even take down the strap. I just pull this part down.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
It just stays all intact.
That's amazing, because I know a lot of people, like, the learning curve of putting on a knit wrap is kind of hard, but then once you get it, like, I had a Moby and they're a little bit thicker, but once you get it, it's like, why would you use anything else?
Oh my gosh, it's life-changing. Yeah. I mean, I'm always telling people, I'm like, it's worth figuring out. If it takes you an entire day and all you do, you need to figure this out, because I don't know how people get anything done with babies without a wrap of some kind.
I don't think they do.
I have people tell me all the time, my child didn't like wraps. And I'm like, you must not have done it right, because they all like it. Like, they really do. I think some moms don't like it because they don't feel like they're in there secure enough. They never could get quite the hang of it. But like, they all like it. And I will say this too, because I know sometimes, like, mine really didn't. They sometimes will fuss when you put them in it, and then you just have to bounce around, pat their butt, and like, they will like it.
I see you do that in your videos. You're always
I'm like, no. I think people think that I put him in and he falls asleep. And sometimes he does, but sometimes he doesn't. And so that doesn't mean your child doesn't like it. It's just that sometimes it takes a little bit of, you have to work with it a little bit first. And
my question is, when your baby starts getting more curious, when they're like 5-6 months old, you just spend less time in the wrap? Like, if they're curious and they want to go, you just let them go?
I would say 6 months is when my babies start coming out of the wrap. I pretty much carry them around constantly for 6 months. And then around 6 months, we start to do a few naps down. They'll start to be on the floor more during the day. Definitely, it's only so long. Like, I'm not really one of those people that wears their toddlers.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, it's just not what I'm into. I mean, you definitely could. But after 6 months, I just pretty much wear them. Like, if they won't sleep, I need to get something done. Or if we're out and about, probably till like 18 months. Like, if we're at church, the baby will still be in the wrap. Feet are hanging down to the knees, you know, but the baby's asleep in the wrap.
my daughter, I would literally wear her just to keep her from climbing a tree or something. She's one. Hard to get her in. I'd have to call in reinforcements from my husband to get her in at this point, because she is moving.
Right. Yeah. It's like only nap times. Like, if we are out and about and it's nap time and, you know, obviously we had to skip a nap. That's when the 1-year-old goes. Other than that, I don't wear the 1-year-old. But I will for those occasions.
Yeah. Does your husband baby wear?
He keeps asking me. He wants to. And I just am like so stingy with my baby. So he's like, why don't you put him on me? I'm like, well, maybe in a few months.
Yeah, no, 100%. So how has your breastfeeding changed from your first baby to your sixth, or has it not?
I would say that first to second, probably it changed a lot. But then from then on, I kind of know the drill. But like with my first, it was like, okay, I nursed her at this time on this side, and she nursed for this long. And it was like something I had to, you know, keep a running total of. And I was not necessarily worried about it, but thinking about it a lot. And then by the second through the sixth, it's just like not even a thing that crosses my mind. It's just like what it's my go-to. It's like the only way I know how to comfort a baby is wearing them and nursing them. But yeah, I mean,
tell people that I'm like, if nature intended them to just be for food, they would be shaped like utensils and not like squishy pillows.
Yeah. And I do definitely nurse the baby to sleep. I've heard people say, we don't want to get them that habit. I'm like, it's an easy habit to break. Just don't do it later. It's fine. It is the way I get a baby to sleep. That is how we get the baby to sleep at night. It works so well. There's no reason not to rely on that. That's what I learned. Because with my first daughter, I definitely was like afraid of all of those things. Like she's developing bad habits and, you know, now she's only going to nurse to sleep and she'll never sleep. And then by the second, I was like, but it works so well. Like, why am I torturing myself here?
Yeah, I think we torture ourselves a lot. And I always tell my patients and the group members, like, if it's working for you, girl, just keep doing that. I mean, what is going to happen? What do you think is going to happen? Like, the police are going to show up and be like, you're not feeding your baby on a schedule, or you're co-sleeping.
They think that, and it's really easy to see when you're on the other side of it. I have an 11-year-old, a 9-year-old, a 6-year-old, a 4-year-old, and a 2-year-old who all sleep through the night. So this is easy for me to see. But whenever my first daughter was a baby, all I saw was like the 3-month-old. And I'm like, how is she ever going to go from sleeping constantly with me, nursing to sleep, to sleeping independently on her own? And I couldn't see it. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's what people are really fearful of, is that they're going to instill these habits and that they're going to be so hard to break, which is just so not true. I can tell you from the other side of it, just do whatever. If it works, you can break all the habits later. They won't even remember.
Oh, they definitely don't. And I think something happens when they turn 5, their little goldfish brains just kind of snap, and like all the memories they previously had, they're like, no, I don't remember that.
People always ask me too, well, how do you eventually get them to sleep? And I'm like, and this is super controversial, and so if you don't agree, that's totally fine. But like, there's a little bit of cry it out. And people are like, are you worried about them not trusting you? And I'm like, I have an 11-year-old, a 9-year-old. I go through the drill. Yeah. And they all trust me. And my mom did it with me too. Like, she told me, eventually you just kind of have to, sorry, but I can't pick you up right now. Yeah. And it takes like 2 nights and then it's over. And my mom did it, and I'm not mad at her, you know?
Yeah. Life is fine, but it's a little hard. So let me break you in softly and just let you know there's going to be some nights you're by yourself.
And if you don't want to do that till they're 3, totally fine. I just got to the point around like 1-ish where I was like, all right, kid, it's time for mommy to be able to sleep on her tummy, you know, not. Mm-hmm. And so whatever that is for you, if it's 3 or 4, whatever, you can sleep with your kid till they're 11. I know people who've done that and they still grew up to be just fine. Yeah. But, you know, don't beat yourself up.
I agree. And I think that postpartum time, whenever you come home, especially the first baby, the changes that you go through as a person, just becoming a mom, and the life that you suddenly have, it can be better. Like, oftentimes you'll be like, oh, this is exactly what I always wanted. And sometimes it's not, though. So like, when you came home with your baby, were you like, oh, this is the life I always wanted? Like, did you have the minimalist lifestyle then? Or is this something that's been like a slow progression of introducing more natural stuff, homemade stuff in your life?
I definitely didn't have that then so much. I had my first daughter when I turned 23 the month before. So I was so young, and she was totally my guinea pig. All the health things that I do now, I did not do then. And I literally thought whenever she stopped nursing at like 18 months that she should be on soy milk. That's how much I did not know. Instead of, you know, feeding them lower amounts of gluten, I like fed her wheat germ. I added wheat germ to her stuff. Like, I made all her homemade baby food in the way that I thought was good. So I was definitely, you know, inching into it, but I did not know what I was doing at all. She's fine. I would say that I was trying to follow all of the rules, and I definitely did not really enjoy the 6 months because I thought I was messing her up. I thought she needed to not sleep with me. And as you know, babies don't sleep on their own. So I wasn't sleeping because I thought, you know, so it was a lot easier, like as I had more for sure.
Yeah. So you would say that it's been more of a slow progression of you becoming from 23 to now.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, for sure. Like I'm always learning something new, adding on to things I've learned. Because people say that to me too. I just don't know where to start. I don't know if I should start with, you know, fermenting vegetables.
Start with the starter.
I'm like, just start buying a whole chicken and cooking it. I'm 10 years older than a lot of people that read my blog. And so I've been a mom that much longer. I've been cooking from scratch that much longer. And it's all just been like a constant learning process.
Yeah. Do you think your husband was aiming for this life, or has this also been kind of a journey that he's just like along for the ride? Because I know as an entrepreneur, my husband is often like, what are we doing?
Yeah, I would say my husband's more of the latter, like along for the ride. So, but I
God
mean, you
bless
know,
him.
Yeah, exactly.
Did he help with your breastfeeding journey at all? Or was there like such a learning curve for him that he was like, you just tell me what to do?
Yeah, maybe a little bit with the first, he would have been more involved with it. The thing is I never had any issues with breastfeeding. Like, I know that people do. I will say that I had pain with probably like 4 of the 6. Mm. And I always tell people that even if it's really painful, it only will be for like a week. And I know that means there's a bad latch, but it still works, you know? But I never had really like a journey because I never had an issue where like a baby wouldn't latch or I was afraid they weren't getting enough.
Yeah. I think a lot of my patients' partners they're fix-it people. And so when they can't fix a situation, they get really stressed out. Like I even had a guy one time while I was trying to teach a mom how to breastfeed. He was just pacing the room and I looked at him and he goes, I got to go get the oil changed.
He's like, I got to do something that I can actually like do.
Exactly. So I try to always ask people like, so what did your husband do? I try to keep a running list of like little jobs you can give them so they can feel involved.
Right. Cause yeah, they do. It's the same with labor. Like they want to help, but there's just nothing they can do about it.
I'm like, push the hips, just counter pressure with your big arms. That's what we need you to do.
Right. Yeah.
Then the raw milk. So my family switched to raw milk because of you. So thank you.
Oh.
My mom, my dad, and my brother are horrible lactose intolerant, or they were. And then she switched to raw milk, and now their digestive issues are like totally fine. So of course we switched. But I have a lot of questions from moms about when I'm nursing and my baby has gas and reflux and, you know, is switching to raw milk going to help? And honestly, I only know a little bit. Just, I know that it works for my family, but why did you switch? Like, where did you hear of it? Why did you switch? And how has it affected your family?
So we switched when my oldest, let's see here, right after the soy milk stint, I was doing a lot of research. I found out that that wasn't really a good option for her. I was on, I believe it was reading Weston Price things, like Weston Price books, Nourishing Traditions and all that. And I learned about the benefits of raw milk and how most of what makes you able to digest milk is destroyed in the pasteurization process. So usually when people can't digest it, that's the reason. And so we sought out a local farm. This was, I guess, around 10 years ago now, actually. And we had like a really nice farm in our area, which just is, I think, probably pretty lucky because I don't know that everybody really has that. And they sold raw milk, raw milk cheese, and we just made the switch and we've never switched back since. As far as like how it'll help their babies, I've never had any of those issues, like where I have to go off of a certain food for my baby to be able to tolerate my milk. I've never had that. Only my first child was the only one I wasn't drinking raw milk while nursing. Mm-hmm. So I think maybe that has something to do with it. And then of course, if you can't tolerate it still, fermenting it with like some homemade kefir is another good option.
You know, I think that because there's currently no safe way to treat reflux in babies at all, there's just not. I mean, I don't know if you've seen about Zantac or whatever, but it's really a cost benefit scenario. So pediatricians now are not really able to prescribe medication for babies and feel good about it. So they often, instead of looking at a mom and being like, there's really nothing we can do, because that's such a hard thing to say to a mom, I think a lot of times they'll tell them, just try cutting out dairy. You never know.
Right. Yeah.
And so they end up changing their entire diet, their entire family's diet. And it's very disruptive. And it doesn't really work a lot of the times.
Okay.
Because, you know, it's not really the number one issue. And a lot of times that's all they say and they don't get any follow-up. So they're still eating cheese and they're still eating like pudding cups and things that have dairy in it.
Just not milk. That
you thought about. Yeah. Right. So I think it's really an easy switch. So for anybody that's listening, look at Lisa's blog posts and her YouTube and just take all of her little tips, because it really is not that hard to make the switch. And I would rather you try that first than try cutting out dairy completely, because you also don't want to eliminate a whole food group for a baby, so because then they're not getting exposure to it for later in their life. You know, you're maturing their guts. That's your job as a parent, is to like introduce them to things to mature their guts. So that's really awesome that you do that. And I really appreciate you talking about it, because it's not FDA approved.
No. And I actually set my YouTube video to private out of fear, but I still have my blog. It's all on my blog. Okay. I just started getting worried about it on YouTube. So
yeah, I mean, we hate that, because like our recommendations.
I know there's so many things I want to talk about. I mean, so many things, mm-hmm. but I just like,
it's things that you can't. Yeah. You feel like you have to be censored on the internet, but I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm gonna be more open about things on my podcast, but like YouTube is just a scarier world.
Oh yeah, podcasts, you can throw F-bombs. There's all kinds
of podcasts. You can do whatever you want.
Well, I won't take up any more of your time. So thank you so much for talking to me.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll talk to you later. Thank you.
Okay. Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Simple Farmhouse Life. If you are interested in some of my full-blown birth stories, I have one for Eli, who was born in the van. I have one for Micah and Daniel, who were both born at home. I still haven't done Jude's home birth story or the girls. I might go more into that on a different podcast episode, but I will leave links to all of those birthing stories in the show notes. You could also just search Farmhouse on Boone birth story on YouTube. They'll come up, or birth story on my blog, farmhouseonboone.com. I also have info on baby wearing. So I have several videos on how to wrap, different styles of wraps, a whole bunch of that stuff. So if you search Farmhouse on Boone baby wearing on Google or YouTube, that will all come up as well. Thank you, as always, for listening.